nama srishtam manamapi satchiputramatra surupam rupam tasyagrajamurupurim maturim goshtavatim radha kundam girivaramaho radhika madhava shamprapto yasya pratita kripaya shrigurum tam natosmi vandeham shri guru shri atath padakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana raghunatan vitam tam sajivam sadvaitam savadhutam parijana sahitam krishna chaitanya devam shri radha krishna padan sahagana lalita shivishakam vitamscha Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now I'm going to speak on Pradyumna. You've all heard of Pradyumna. Why am I going to speak on Pradyumna? You won't know, you won't be able to guess. The reason is that I've been giving a series of lectures over the last few years on Vishnu Sahasranama, and I'm now on name 646, which is Pradyumna. We've all heard the name Pradyumna. Has anyone got any idea what it means? Any Sanskrit scholars here? Anyone? No. Pra, the prefix pra is an intensifier. And Dyumna gives the idea of just like a Dyuman is the name of Vishnu in Vishnu Sahasranama. It means who is lustrous, who has light. So it means very bright. Can also mean wealthy. And of course, Krishna is very bright and very wealthy. Whoever becomes devotee of Krishna becomes very bright, not necessarily wealthy. You might lose all your wealth. We get the real wealth of Krishna consciousness. So Pradyumna, of course, is well known as the first son of Krishna. He's also non-different from Krishna. He's also a Vishnu form. Performed many pastimes, very powerful warrior. He was so beautiful that he was sometimes mistaken for Krishna. And he is the so beautiful that sometimes mistaken for Krishna. And he is the original form of Kama Dev. Kama is very dangerous. Kama means desire. Everyone is tied in this material world by material desire. The god of desire is called Kama, Kama Dev, who binds everyone in this material world by shooting arrows of love, which bind one in this material world. But there is the transcendental Kama, transcendental desire. Desire in this world is very strong. We're all tied in this world by desire. Why are we born again and again and again and again and again and again? Because we have desires to fulfill. So Buddha Dev analyzed that this world is full of suffering. Suffering is caused by desire. Because we desire, therefore we act to try to fulfill the desire. In performing acts, we engender or give rise to pious and sinful activities. So to get the results of them, of those activities, we have to be born again and again. And so there are different factors in reincarnation. One factor is that we have desires which we wish to be fulfilled. And another is that we have to enjoy and suffer the results of pious and sinful activities. So Buddha Dev analyzed that the root cause of suffering is desire, and therefore his idea was to stop desire, but that is not possible to stop desire, because desire is the inherent, intrinsic characteristic of the living being. The very meaning of being living is inseparable from desire. So does that mean that we are condemned to suffer in this material world? Buddhadev said to stop desire. That was his solution. But it's not really a solution, because you can't stop desire. And the whole attempt to become free from desire, well, you can only become, how are you going to become free from desire? How do you achieve anything? Well, first of all, you have to have the desire. Just like I presume most of you were born in India. How did you end up in America? It wasn't that you went to sleep one day in Gujarat and woke up the next morning in New Jersey. It didn't happen like that, right? You had a desire to come here. And you pursued that desire and you came here. So to become free from material desire, one has to have the desire to become free from desire. But that's a conundrum, because it just goes round in circles. You can't get free from desire unless you desire to become free from desire. But if you desire to become free from desire, then you desire. So you're caught. So the whole thing, the Vaishnav understanding or explanation is that we have to purify desire. We cannot become free from desire, but the desires have to become purified. And this whole endeavor is summarized in one verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Atendriya Priti Vancha Tare Bole Kam Krishnendriya Priti Vancha Dhare Prema Nam. Material desire. What is that? That is the desire to satisfy one's own senses. And the desire to satisfy Krishna's senses, that is called prem or love. But in material consciousness, people have no, they don't distinguish between the two. They don't know. People think that love means love for my wife, my children, my family members, my country, my dog, for ice cream, for chocolates. We say like that, don't we? I love ice cream. I love America. I love my wife. And it can change also. It doesn't usually go to I hate chocolates, but it could be I hate my ex-wife. It can turn like that. It starts off, I love you, I can't live for a moment without you. And it can turn to I never want to see your face again, ever in my life. It's often like that. They'll say, I love you, and then after some time, I hate you. So this is material desire. Material love gives rise to material hate. But when we love Krishna, then there's no question of hate. And even those who hate Krishna, it's an extremely diseased position. It's mental disease. The demons who hate Krishna. Well, Krishna has a program for them too. They may be killed by him, then they get put in the freezer in the impersonal Brahman for some time. And they can attain to Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Asura Shakal Pailo Charan. Even all the demons, they can attain to Krishna ultimately. So in the material world, everything is going on by personal supervision. This may be difficult for people to understand who are raised with modern education, so-called education, which gives people a very wrong understanding of reality. The idea that life and the whole universe is running on Jagad Ahura Nishvaram Asatyam Apratishtam Te. Te here means the demons. They think there's no ultimate reality, no ultimate truth. There's no controller of the universe. But there is a controller of the universe. And all the functions within the universe are controlled. There are presiding deities of everything. How many times did you blink in the last 10 minutes? Someone, maybe the children at school, they learn these kind of things. Unknowingly, we blink from time to time. Even the blinking of the eye is supervised by some demigod. So this powerful function within the material world called desire, that's overseen by a demigod. Very, very powerful. Desire is very, very powerful. We who are meant for loving Krishna, our desires are instead projected into matter, so that we, instead of loving Krishna on the spiritual platform, we think that our life will be fulfilled by projecting love into some blobs of matter, which are called Deha Patyakala Tadrishu Atma Sanyeshva Satsvapi. We think that the wife, children, the bodies, they are desirable and they will protect us. So it's a great illusion how the jiva, who is meant for unlimited love of Krishna, instead becomes illusioned into projecting desire into matter. So the God who oversees this is known as Kamadev, and especially the beauty of the form. The, in human life is the opportunity for God realization, and especially the male form is meant for self-realization. Men and women equally can take to bhakti, but as far as the philosophical approach to self-realization, that has traditionally been the domain of men. Not women. The female form is very beautiful to the man, and that blocks, that attraction to the female form blocks self-realization. Not just the form, all the senses. The sweet sound of the female voice, the tinkling of the ankle bells, that was there in Indian culture until recently. Women, even young girls, would have tinkling ankle bells. So if you don't see, you hear the sound, the sweet sound of the voice, the by taste, by preparing very nice foodstuffs in various ways, the female traps the male in material existence. And the male also is a form of illusory attraction for the female. So this very powerful force is overseen by Kamadev. But the material, the God who oversees this desire in material existence. But the Krishna, he is called the Aprakrita Madam, the transcendental, beyond matter. Beyond matter, Cupid, Kamadev, in the English or Greek mythology, they call Cupid. What's the Greek name? Eros, of course, I should have known. In the heart of London, the maybe number two capital of Kali Yuga after New York. I'm not insulting you, you're not New Yorkers, right? This is not New York. So, in the heart of London, there is a statue of Eros with the same. Kamadev, you see in Indian iconography, has bow and arrows, flower arrows. So Eros also, in the heart of London, is naked with his bow and arrows shooting. And from that word Eros, we get words like erotic, sexual, sexual desire. is called erotic. Erotica, things that excite sexual attraction. So Krishna is the transcendental mother, and that means that Krishna's names, the sound of his voice, the sound of his flute, the form, his beautiful form, Kandarpa Koti Kamaniya, Vishesha Shobham. Kandarpa is another name of Kamadev. And Krishna's form is so beautiful that it is attractive, more attractive than that of millions of cupids. So that Kamadev, that is Pradyumna. Kamadev in this material world, one of his names is Ananga. Anga means body, Ananga means nobody. Not nobody, the English word, but no body. Two words, no body, not having a body. He lost his body when the demigods, they're being harassed by the demons, as is quite common for them. And they wanted Lord Shiva to have a son who could be powerful enough to lead the host of the demons, the host of the demigods, to defeat the demons. But Lord Shiva's deep in meditation, and he doesn't want to come out of meditation. But to have a son, then he has to have a wife. But he didn't want to have a wife. He's deep in meditation. So anyway, Cupid was sent on the dangerous mission of trying to excite Lord Shiva into sexual union. Dangerous job to try to disturb a yogi's meditation, especially when that yogi is Lord Shiva. So anyway, he tried firing his arrows, and Lord Shiva, noticing this, became angry at Kamadev. So from his third eye came fire and burned him. So he became, he didn't die, but he lost his body, became bodiless. Ananga. So then he again took a form as Pradyumna. But Pradyumna is actually, he's the original form of whom Kamadev, Cupid, Eros, is the material counterpart. So Pradyumna is very beautiful. The name Pradyumna, every name has a meaning. In Sanskrit, every name has a meaning. You probably, sitting here, there are various names you may have. I don't know, Suresh, Satish, Rajesh, Rajendra, names like this. So they all have a meaning. Probably there's the names I said, at least some of you have these. These are common Indian names. They all have a meaning. Nowadays, the girls, they give names like Dimple and Pinky, which they don't have any meaning. But all the names, they have a meaning derived from Sanskrit. And often people don't know what their name means even. So Pradyumna means the bestower of all desires. That's how it's... As Cupid, Kamadev, he is the bestower of all desires. He, by his brightness, he illumines the jivas. We're all in darkness. Agyanatimirandhasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namah. We're all in darkness. What is the darkness? The darkness of ignorance. So, who illumines or brings light to our life is one who gives transcendental knowledge. So that's another meaning of Pradyumna. Who has got great wealth? Of course, when we speak of the wealth of Krishna, of Vishnu, it doesn't mean like Bill Gates' wealth or Bill Clinton's wealth or who are some other wealthy people in America? Who? I don't know, I couldn't hear. Anyway, you know. Soros, someone like that? Someone named George Soros? Jeff Bezos, head of Amazon. Okay, I heard of him. And then there's Mark Zuckerberg, reputed to be a lizard by some, very, some people think, wealthy lizard. So, wealth, they all have wealth, but what is their wealth? It's measured in figures on a computer screen, which are convertible into green pieces of paper, green and white pieces of paper, which can be exchanged for things like all kinds of things, like Coca-Cola, and if you put enough of them together, you could buy a house. So many different things. So that's called wealth. But the wealth of Krishna, of course, Krishna has the opulent palaces and all these things, but really his wealth, it's of a completely different level, because the real wealth of Krishna is the love he exchanges with his devotees. And the wealth he has is unlimited, inexhaustible, and not subject to time. The rich man of today is going to be the poor man of tomorrow by the force of time, either in this lifetime or in the next life. Someone may be very, very rich in this life and very, very poor in the next life. But for Krishna, his wealth is of a superior order. So when we see the sun, we shouldn't look too much, shouldn't look at the sun much after sunrise, so bright, but we should know that that brightness is only a tiny fraction of the brightness of Krishna. So when we see the sun, we can think of Krishna. Prabhashmi Shashi Surya Yoho, Krishna says, I am the light of the sun and the moon. And we can also, if tomorrow you see the sun, if it's not cloudy, then you can also, we can also think of Pradyumna. Yesterday we heard about Pradyumna. So he's very bright and lustrous. And he gives light to the jivas also, just like I was saying, and devotee of Krishna is very bright. The more we become desirous, the more we increase material desires, the face becomes dull. Dull with material desire. We sink into tamoguna. Someone who's in sattvaguna, tamoguna, the mode of ignorance, someone in sattvaguna, their face becomes bright. So generally we see if someone becomes detached from material life and they have some spiritual pursuit, their face becomes bright. And especially if one becomes a devotee of Krishna, one's face becomes bright. Now it may be that someone's face becomes bright on the material platform also, just like if someone wins an Olympic gold medal, their face will be very bright with happiness, but it won't last long. But the spiritual brightness that remains is always bright with love of Krishna. We know, of course, Krishna, he's so bright. He was stealing from the houses of the residents of Vrindavan, stealing butter and yogurt and the owners of the houses, the women in charge of the house, complained to his mother that maybe you should take off his gems, because he goes in the dark storehouses with the gems on his body, they illuminate so he can see. But even if you take off the gems, still he's so bright. Makes it difficult for Krishna to hide also. So this is Pradyumna, very bright. It's also a name, it's not only a name for the son of Krishna, but it's also a general name for Vishnu in the Vishnu Sahasranama. And it's a specific name of the first son of Krishna by his first wife, Rukmini. So among Krishna's 168,000 sons, 16,108, so that becomes 161,080 sons. Pradyumna is the first and the most famous. Famous not just because he was the first, but he was also a great fighter. Krishna, as the king of Dwaraka, was taking the role of a kshatriya. So he came, vinashayata dushkritam, for destroying demoniac elements on the earth. And Pradyumna was one of his main assistants in doing so. Now, Parashara Bhatta, who's the first commentator on Vishnu Sahasranam in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, this series of names he interprets in terms of various forms of Lord Vishnu in various holy places. In the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, there are listed 108 holy places. So he gives the names of various forms related to that. Now, Baladev Vidyabhushan, he is the Gauriya Vaishnava commentator on Vishnu Sahasranama. And he combines this name, Pradyumna, with the next name, which is Amita Vikrama. Because there are verses in Vishnu Sahasranama, and to make 1,000 names, the Sanskrit can be divided in different ways. So different commentators, sometimes they combine names or divide the Sanskrit, the Sandhi, in different ways. So Baladev Vidyabhushan appears to be unique in this regard, in that he combines the two names. He combines these two names to mean that Krishna of Amita Vikrama, because his strength is unlimited, he defeated Chanura, the wrestler Chanura. These series of names in this verse, Baladev Vidyabhushan has connected with these names with Krishna's pastimes when Krishna first entered Mathura. So all these names he gives in relation to this. So of course Krishna killed so many demons, but after leaving Vrindavan and entering Mathura, the first demon he killed was Kuvalayapura, the elephant, who was demoniac elephant. And then the next was, I just said the name, the wrestler Chanura. Then going on to the next name is Amita Vikrama. These are both fairly common names in India up to the present day. Amit Shah, second most famous Gujarati at the present time. Well, the Ambanis are there. In politics, the second most famous is Amit Shah. And you don't know anything about, because who cares about Amit Shah if you're in America? Just like if you're in India, who cares about who's the governor of New Jersey? Anyone know? You don't know. Even in New Jersey, they don't care. So what to speak of in America, in India? Anyway, Amit Shah is a big politician in India. And they all know because they're all from India, and probably mostly Gujaratis. And he's also a Gujarati. Gujarati is a state in India, just like New Jersey is a state in the United States of America. So Amit, it's a well-known name. And Vikram, it's a common name, often given for Kshatriyas. Vikram Singh, like that. So Vikram gives the idea of a very powerful person. And Amit also, it means... also gives the idea of powerful, unlimited, or non-mit means to decline, so to go down, to decrease. So Amit means non-decreasing. So Vikram means one who is of non... Amita Vikrama means one who is of non-decreasing prowess. So the same idea you get, the difference between material and spiritual. Someone may be very powerful materially, but that will decrease and decline. And even some very powerful wrestler or fighter, I believe most of the world heavyweight boxing champions in history have mostly come from the United States. And I don't know about now, but when I was a kid, there was Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier, and there must have been so many since then, but I don't know. So they're very... you won't want to get in a fight with them, unless you're a professional boxer like them. They're really strong bodies. But there came a time, there must have come a time, where they died. Their strength declined and decreased. It happens to everyone. Even the biggest, strongest people, and even there are other kinds of strength also, political strength, that will decline. Just like in India, the Congress Party at one time seemed invincible, but now it seems unlikely they'll ever get power again. Not with a clear majority, anyway. So their power has declined. It's just the nature of time that everything must decline. Now in America, it is the most powerful country in the world, and the feeling is it will go on forever, but it won't. There have been so many countries in history have been the greatest countries in the world, most powerful. Who would have thought that the mighty Roman Empire would ever decline? But it did. Greece was so powerful. What's Greece now? It's just a squeezed up country, squeezed in the sense that it's wrung out by the European Union and the poverty-stricken European country. Iraq was the site of a powerful civilization. Who would think now? This is so. America is now very powerful, but it won't last. Nothing in this world will last. Whatever power is there, it must decline. Power, strength, beauty. Who's the most beautiful Hollywood actress now? You wouldn't know. Bollywood, you would know. Maybe. I don't know. Say some names. Anyone? Bollywood, Hollywood. Anyone know? Anyway, whatever. Who is there? Recently died. Sridevi. She was a beautiful actress. So it doesn't last. It doesn't last. How long does a woman's beauty last? Maybe from the age of 16 up to... stretch it out up to 36. And if you really lose a lot of makeup, then maybe a little longer. It's not long. Doesn't last. Everything in this world declines. It's a cause of great sorrow for materialistic people, for someone whose happiness comes from looking in the mirror. Ah, I'm so beautiful. And there are not that many who are actually beautiful. But some of them are. And they see, oh, there's a little line here. Put some powder, quick, cover it. What shall I do? I have to do some yoga, put some cream. But the line gets bigger and more lines come. And sorrow enters the heart that the beauty that I had is now declining. And it goes on declining, and there's no way to bring it back. So someone who has wealth, they may die wealthy, but they suffer more at death because they're so attached to their wealth. So whatever power, beauty, everything, it's simply a cause of suffering. Happiness, material happiness, is simply a cause of suffering. We find there are many men who are very strong, and they take pleasure in maintaining their family. They're dutiful, responsible husbands. People come to them, oh, I'm in need, I need to get my daughter married, I have no money. All right, you take this money. They take pleasure in giving charity. But there comes a time when they have to be looked after by others. And for them, it's very painful because they were proud about their physical strength and their ability to help others. And when they naturally become old, and then you may need help to even to get up in the morning, to eat food, even to pass stool and urine for everything, and it becomes very painful for someone who was under the illusion that I am looking after others. So of course it's the duty of parents and teachers and to look after their children and their students and so on. But we should always understand that it's my duty, I'm doing as long as I have the strength which is given by Krishna. And when one becomes old, then accept service from others. But if one is thinking, I am powerful, then it becomes very painful even to be helped by others. They feel that to be humiliating. But Krishna is Amita Vikrama. His strength, his bodily luster, his brightness, it never declines. That is Krishna. He's always powerful. And even if sometimes he appears to be less powerful or not powerful, that's only as he chooses to do for his pastimes. Sometimes we find in the battle in Lanka, Rama and Lakshman at some point became unconscious, as if almost dead. We should understand this all to be the pastimes of Krishna, Rama, because he gets up and fights again, ultimately, taking help from his devotees, the Sushena, the physician among the monkeys says, oh, for this condition, such and such herbs are required, but you won't get them here, you'll get them in the Himalayas. So Hanuman has to jump and bring back the mountain, because he can't, there's no time to look for the herbs. So just bring the whole mountain, and then Sushena can find them and make the preparation and give them to Rama and Lakshman. So it's all pastimes of Krishna. Otherwise, just being God and being all powerful there's not much fun there. But if he appears to be, even though he's all powerful, he appears to be dependent upon his devotees, and that gives him great pleasure. To appear to be dependent upon his devotees. And Hanuman saved Rama and Lakshman. How is that possible? Rama and Lakshman saving the whole world. But out of his great love, because Hanuman is prepared to do that. He'll do anything. He himself has got Amita Vikrama. He's got undeclining vigor by the grace of Rama. But he uses that only for the service of Rama. So Rama sometimes appears to make his own devotees more powerful than himself, because he wants to engage them in his service. This exchange of service. Another meaning of Amita is innumerable. So he has got innumerable feet. How about that? Sarvata pani padam tat. Sarvatokshi shiro mukham. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the Paramatma, the Kshetragya, the Supreme Lord, his hands and legs are everywhere. Sarvata, everywhere. Pani means hand, and pada means feet. Sarvata pani padam tat, sarvata, sarvatokshi, his eyes are everywhere. Sarvato mukham, his heads are everywhere. So he's in everyone's heart as Paramatma, in every atom. And every heart and every atom, he has two legs, and there are unlimited manifestations of the Paramatma, so he has many legs. So that, because Vikrama, Krama literally means step. So Trivikrama means, Vi means a big step. So Trivikrama, three big steps, is a name for Vamanadeva. So Vikrama, who takes big steps, who has big strides. So Amita Vikrama, he has unlimited feet. So that's another way to interpret it. This name, Vikrama, it came earlier also in Vishnu Sahasranam. So that's why some of the commentators, they combine here, Amita Vikrama. The name is Vikrama, and if he's of great prowess, and then to emphasize it more, Amita Vikrama. So like that, in this way, the name is derived. So, Hare Krishna. That's all I have to say on these names now, unless anyone wants to ask any questions about this. Are any of you familiar with Vishnu Sahasranama? Any of you ever chanted that? You did? It used to be common in Brahmin families. Still going on in South India in some places. Not much in Gujarat. Yeah.
Thank you, Shaman. Matthew told us about the attraction of material energy, which keeps us down here. But if by design we are made like that...
By design we are made to be attracted to the material energy.
So how...
God made us with desire to enjoy this material world, therefore we should enjoy it.
Now how...
We were made to enjoy this material world, but it all rests on desire, right? I was saying desire. So because we desire to enjoy this material world, therefore we get bodies which are suitable for enjoying this material world. But the only problem is that there is no enjoyment in the material world. So we can try to enjoy the material world, but it all ends up as suffering. Jai. Jai Advaita Maharaja Ki Jai. So the bodies are made for enjoying this material world, and they're made for suffering in this material world. So in the human form of life, we also have sufficient intelligence to understand that the endeavor to enjoy this material world simply results in misery. And therefore, nayang deho deha bhajang riloke kashtan kaman arhate birbhujam ye Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shudyat yasmat brahma sokyam tvananta. In this verse, the word kaman comes. Do you know this verse from Bhagavatam? Lord Rishabhdev instructs his sons that having attained the human form of life, we should not desire to fulfill our desires in the same way that pigs and dogs do so. So it's very graphic language. If I say to you, don't live like a pig, it sounds very insulting. But practically, Rishabhdev is saying that everyone in this world, unless they fix their life's desires, their attention on spiritual fulfillment, then the people are living like pigs, because the aim of the pig is to enjoy his senses, and the aim of a person without a spiritual focus is to enjoy the senses. Therefore, he says, Tapo Divyam, one should perform divine austerities to attain that platform of unlimited spiritual happiness. So it's not that we're not meant for happiness. We are meant for happiness. But our attention is diverted to trying to enjoy the senses and material happiness, which is what living beings in the body of pigs do. So we should rather withdraw from material sense gratification by performing tapasya. And therefore, in that way, we can attain to spiritual realization, unlimited spiritual. But it doesn't happen overnight. It's not that you go to some yoga class and meditate and go like that a few times and then you get some self-realization. It may take many lifetimes. This whole idea of instant self-realization, it's cheating, actually. Anyway, I'll give the mic to Dvaita Maharaj. No, it's all right. It's time for you to speak.
What are we doing, taking questions?
Well, I just finished speaking on Vishnu Sahasranam, and I just taken a question. So we can go on with questions and answers. You also had you were going to ask a question? Can continue. I just spoke for what, half an hour, something like that? So if there are any general questions, then yeah. You please put to Jayadvaita Maharaj. Oh, well, I guess it's for me then.
Yeah. In the beginning of your talk, you said that Lord Buddha said we should stop desire.
Yeah. That was his formula for getting free from suffering.
Okay, so my understanding is that Buddha is some form of incarnation of Krishna.
That's true. That's true. Why would he desire to tell us to stop desiring when he knows it is not possible to stop desiring? Well, what was going on in the world at that point in time, during that era, was that the Vedas were being misused. Because in the Vedas there are directions for performing animal sacrifices. Not exactly for slaughtering the animal, but for those who are expert in reciting Vedic mantras, they could revive an animal by the mantra, by the power of their tapasya, their austerity. The powerful brahmanas could revive animals, and that would show, in other words, the animal would be killed and they would revive them by their mantra, and that would be a sign that they were fit to perform such sacrifices. But in the modern age, there are no brahmanas who are able to do that. So modern age means, when we say Lord Buddha, that's modern according to Vedic chronology, because time goes back and back and back and forward and forward and forward. The time from Lord Buddha to now is just a very short time. So the brahmanas, they were not able to revive the animals, therefore the Vedic sacrifices were meaningless. And the in the name of Vedic sacrifices, so many people were killing animals unnecessarily. So Lord Buddha came and he decried the Vedic, all of the Vedas. He didn't just speak this wrong philosophy, but he decried all the Vedas. So we don't follow the Vedas. He said, if the Vedas promote animal killing, reject the Vedas. So it was a trick. He said that he didn't promote worship of God, but then people started worshipping him, who is God. So indirectly, he benefited them, because people at that time were not ready for higher instruction. For the animal killers, it's very difficult to give proper instruction. So that was the purpose of Lord Buddha's appearance. If you'd like to know about that in more detail, along with many, many important instructions, you please read The Teachings of Lord Chaitanya by Srila Prabhupada. Have you got that book?
Yes, but I want to ask you about the beautiful appearance of Ananda.
You said that he advocated a process which was not possible for cheating others. For cheating others, yeah. Cheating them in a good way. Just like a child doesn't want to take medicine, but the parent wants to give the medicine. And the child is adamant. So the parent says, open your mouth and I will give you a sweet. The child opens the mouth and in goes the medicine. So the parent cheats the child for the child's benefit. So Lord Buddha taught this process by which people would cease from gross sense gratification. If he had said too that you direct your desires to God, but people at that time were not ready for that. So practically the philosophy he taught was very similar to the Vedic philosophy, that there is reincarnation, that we should not live a life of sense gratification, we should get liberated from this world. But he also introduced some non-Vedic ideas, which were later rectified to some extent by Shankaracharya, and then later to the full extent by the Vaishnava Acharyas. It is difficult to understand why God would cheat us, but in one sense, he's doing so all the time because we want to be cheated. We're in the material world and we feel attraction to the material world because we have that ungodly desire. So Lord Buddha also appears to mislead the atheists, because people have that inclination. Then he provides a suitable philosophy for them to pursue that. He gives us what we want, but he also does so in a way that we can ultimately be benefited. Yeah, please direct your question to Jayadvaita Maharaj. Jayadvaita Maharaj.
Vishnu Sahasranama, so many names are repeated so many times. Is there any significance for that?
I guess I should answer this. There is a significance for why several of the names are repeated. Some names are repeated twice, some names are repeated three times, four times. But the first commentator, in this Kali Yuga at least, is Parashara Bhatta of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. And he analyzes each name in context with the other names adjacent to that. So it may appear in one verse with some names, in another verse with other names. But he goes through all the Vishnu Sahasranama and takes names in groups. Just like here, Baladev Vidyabhushan, in that he's analyzing the names in relation to Krishna's pastimes when he first entered Mathura. And Parashara Bhatta is analyzing in terms of various deities in different Divya Deshams, in holy places. So the name may occur, and although in any occurrence there could be hundreds of meanings given, but specific meanings are given in relation to the names just before and just after. Pradyumna I just spoke on, and two names prior to that was Aniruddha. So like that, you'll find that. Amita Vikrama. Yeah, so Pradyumna and Amita Vikrama, Baladev Vidyabhushan combines the two names together. Like that. No, that's it. So think of some question.
Well, I was just wondering why there's so many Upapuranas, lesser Puranas. There are so many lesser and regional Puranas besides the 18 Puranas, and there's also a lot of versions of the Mahabharata as well. And some say some of them are modified than others. I was wondering, in regards to Pradyumna and the other avatars of the order, how do we know which of those are modified or which ones are modified?
So. Yeah, okay, you can say also.
As far as I understand, these multiple Puranas have to do with the glorification of the Lord in terms of local temples, local deities, and so on. But they're not considered to be in the same category as the 18 Puranas. As far as Mahabharata, Mahabharata is very big, and it's coming in different from different sides. From Kashmir, there's one tradition. From another side, there's another tradition. The differences between the editions are not as important as the central theme of glorification of the Lord. Or something like that.
Yeah, there are different recensions from different parts of India. And according to Sri Madhvacharya, he says Mahabharata is ati prakshipt, highly interpolated. And he gives the clear understanding of Mahabharata. We have to understand Shastra through Acharya. So he gives the clear understanding in his Mahabharata Tatparya Nirnay. So we can understand through the Acharyas what to accept and what not to accept. If you want to become a scholar, you can go through all the editions of Mahabharata and become more confused. But how many Shastras can we read and understand anyway? Therefore, we take the essence of all Shastra, which is Srimad Bhagavatam, and that's also a Vashastra, so we understand through our Acharya. And details, so many details we can get into, but it may become confusing. So we accept that Shastra is given to us by Krishna through the great Acharyas. We have to understand it from them, and otherwise there's no end. Shabda Jala Maharanyam Kevala Chitta Brahmanam. Shankaracharya says that the Shabda, the word of Vedic sounds, is it's like a great forest. And we get confused if we wander in that forest. So therefore we have to take Shastra from Acharyas. And so among the Acharyas, some may Some may take up such questions. There are unlimited questions. We can raise unlimited doubts. Why are there so many Puranas, Upapuranas? Because the world, there are many, many things in the world, many things to be known. Many of the Puranas deal, Garuda Purana deals with gems and ghosts and all kinds of things. And if you want to become an expert in gemology or ghostology or whatever, you can study that. But what is the essence? What is the essence? And also, they may contradict each other according to different people's different levels of eligibility to understand and different people's desire to understand in different ways. Parikshit, what does he do when he learns that he's going to be bitten in 7 days? He goes to the bank of the Ganga and fasts, right? Well, see the Mahabharata, and he builds a fort all around him so no one can come in. Maybe. There may be some going on like that also. Just like even in the Bhagavatam, we have two Shukadevs, right? One, when his father says, don't run away, one of them says, okay, and he comes back and gets married, has children. And Shukadeva, who instructed Parikshit, is the one who we follow. So it can be very confusing if we want to be confused. Otherwise, who's going to read 18 Puranas? How many Upapuranas, Stala Puranas? Imaginary invented Puranas, there are plenty of them also. If we are desirous to know the highest truth, Krishna will reveal himself. Brahmanda Brahmete Kono Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade. If we desire to remain in this material world, we can do so in a Vedic way. The Vedic way to remain in Maya. Oh, there are multiple Vedic ways because the Vedas give multiple paths. I can't hear what it is.
Three Abrahamic religions, three main ones. Say that especially in this current modern age, and maybe even some time in the past, that they now more spiritually bankrupt than ever before. More because the world has advanced to such materialism that instead of rebelling against this materialistic image, they kind of came to a more secular, this is gone, and people are looking elsewhere for true spiritual depth. That all along that. Such as all three of your religions see that the slaughter of cows and the slaughter of
cows. I'm sorry, did you hear anything you said? Start again.
Try to condense your question also.
The three Abrahamic religions, would you say they become
become more spiritually bigger as time goes on, but they always were. I've seen that they've always been kind of materialistic, you know, this current age, just kind of showing them for what they are, and that, you know, wholesale slaughter of animals, destruction of the environment. That's basically believe that this world was created by God for us to enjoy.
What's the question?
You have to speak clearly and loudly to the point.
I think the mic is also, I don't know, the
you
sound
have to speak
is
right into the mic.
The sound is not clear, and the question is also not clear.
I can't hear what you're saying. So speak right into the mic.
It's like this. The Abrahamic religions, they teach that we're meant to enjoy this world, and that has given rise to, what do you say, exploitation of the environment, mass slaughter of animals, and what's the question?
Would you say that would be true, that they are spiritually bankrupt?
Would you say that they are spiritually bankrupt of this? They're materialistic to the core. Would you say? Is your name Adhokshaja? You were given that name, Adhokshaja?
No, when I'm doing the puja.
And when you're doing the puja, yeah. I thought it might be your name. You're wondering what it is. This comes in Vishnu Sahasranama, so I gave an extended talk on that, if you'd like to find it somewhere out there on the internet. On my website, you can see. That's the meaning that Jayadvaita Maharaj gave, and if you want more discussion, it's out there. Oh, if you just look up the name Adhokshaja there, you should find it.
Yeah.
Good search engine, huh?